You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Scott Stevens. Scott is an award-winning television weatherman who, a decade ago, began investigating the claims of Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bearden that North America was being subjected to full-time weather modification. During the course of that personal investigation, he was the first to discover the primary reason for the now global chemtrail phenomena. During Scott's two-decade television career, he worked in Topeka, Kansas, Omaha, Nebraska, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Albany, New York, and Pocatello, Idaho. Scott now hosts a weekly radio program, America, now 8 p.m. to midnight on Saturdays, with the Genesis Communication Network at www.radioamericanow.com. He's graciously ignoring his own radio show so he could be with us here at BBS. He is also a principal with Blue Water Alchemy and the Global Project to bring about a shift of human consciousness in concert with events surrounding 2012. I'll talk about that in a minute. Let's get Scott on the show now before the hour's up. Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, buddy. Hanging in there.
I'm hanging in there, too. It's been a strange spring equinox day. Not what I expected at all. What about you?
Well, I think all of these days are a little bit odd anymore. There's just a whole lot of energy pouring into this planet, and I think some of us just don't quite know what to do with it.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you on that one. Before we get started, I wanted to tell everybody that's listening, either now or in the future or in some distant past, to go to your website, which is www.weatherwars.info, and be sure to watch the videos, at least these two videos, Chemtrails Part 1 and Chemtrails Part 2 is especially good. I think that you've got the most comprehensive chemtrail site, well, weather war site, and professionally done on the Internet.
You know, Lance, that was the whole reason I started the site, is that when I became aware of chemtrails, it was probably 1999 and 2000, when in perusing some of the alternative web news sites, occasionally a story related to something called chemtrails would show up. You know, and you know, I'm a pretty open-minded guy, and so I would follow those links on rents or what really happened, these kind of things, and would kind of drill into the chemtrail story, and then pop off to Barium Blues or Chemtrail Central or Clifford Carnicom's great site, carnicom.com, and kind of begin to do some researching. And I guess initially it was rents.com and that particular site that was kind of the clearinghouse for the information. But Lance, I didn't like how a lot of the articles were written. They didn't know cloud types. They didn't understand how contrails formed, and they were coining new words like chem clouds it was just blah 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 blah.
Oh yeah.
So I thought, well, you know, if you don't understand basic meteorology, how are you going to convince anybody that knows something about meteorology that this phenomena is something abnormal?
Yeah.
And so for a couple of years, I honestly, you know, kept both hands, you know, extended out in front of me, and I kept this topic at a distance. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. However, it doesn't mean I didn't start paying a little closer attention to the skies. And as you read in the intro, I was primarily concerned with the work of Lieutenant Colonel Bearden. And in his works about energetics and free energy, because to me, it was apparent a decade ago that this world was facing an energy crisis that was artificially created. Since there are so many solutions to our energy problems just sitting out there waiting to be deployed. And that's where I was interested, and that's what I was originally researching when I stumbled onto Colonel Bearden's site. And one of the sidebars was Soviet weather engineering over North America. That had my attention. And that happened right after 2001. Oh. And so, you know, after 9/11 happened, there wasn't a conspiracy that I wasn't going to be a little bit interested in.
Huh.
Because it was just obvious that the man behind the curtain had just pulled a big fast one on the world.
Uh-huh.
And didn't want to be seen. And so I'm like, well, if you don't want to be seen, by God, I'm going to go looking.
And, good for you.
Well, so, you know, I dug into energetics, and I dug into SCADA weaponry, and Colonel Bearden had enough interesting cloud pictures on his site that I spent $110 and bought my first little Olympus digital camera.
Oh.
And that changed how I looked at the sky in 2001. And I began to, as we know with digital cameras, you can very cheaply document, you know, picture, not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I began to do a lot more photography of the skies. And over that 3 years between 2001 and 2004, I became utterly convinced that there was something amiss in the skies. And that didn't even bring in the chemtrails. There was enough weird things going on in the sky. There were enough odd shapes. And I began purchasing, you know, high-resolution satellite imagery. Because what you find on the National... Yeah, because the stuff the National Weather Service feeds you and the stuff you get on TV is crap. It's crap imagery. You know, you can't watch an evening news now and get a good satellite picture. They're all cartooned out.
Whoa.
And so, yeah, they're wiping the science out of meteorology.
Whoa.
And the people, you know, they still take it. So I was, you know, looking at this high-resolution satellite imagery and started seeing waves and grids and patterns in the skies that I'm like, this is not supposed to be here. This clouds cannot look like this.
Right.
And I mean,
they don't look. I learned about cumulus clouds and cirrus clouds and school, but they don't make tic-tac-toe formations.
Well, not typically. You know, in cirrus clouds, you know, your grandparents are in the 30s and 40s, they were called mare's tails.
Mm.
You know, just long, long, straight clouds with a gentle wisp or gentle curl at the end.
Mm.
That's not at all what they look like now. They are squared. Almost every cirrus cloud will have a series of 90-degree bends and twists in them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not natural.
No.
So as I became utterly convinced on June 6, 2004, that the entire planet's weather was manhandled to some degree, I was okay with weather modification. It was on that date in June of 2004 that I kind of had my realization, and my stomach sunk deep into my gut as I realized that I, as a weatherman, was not capable of forecasting the weather anymore because I was not forecasting the natural processes of the planet, where I was trying to forecast the intent of some organization that had control of the weather. And that was a huge paradigm shift for me, and I still had no idea where the chemtrails were in all of this.
Now, while you were a news anchor, Did you notice from the images that you got in the TV newsrooms that there was something wrong or something different that wasn't being shown? And were you told not to investigate, or were you hampered in any way in saying anything about it?
The answer to both of those questions is no.
Okay.
Nobody told me not to say anything. And the data that I was getting from our weather WSI, it's Weather Services International. It's a company that the stations that I've worked for would purchase our weather data from to go into the weather graphics systems and so forth and so on. The data was good, but I didn't know what to look for. I didn't know what to look for. You know, it's like discovering a story in the snow on your analog TV. Like, oh my goodness, there's a story in there, there's a pattern to this snow. And that's really what I discovered, is that there's a pattern to what appears to be chaos. Uh-huh. And what, this is where the chemtrails show up. So, after I'd come to the realization that they were using directed energy weapons and acoustic and all of their portfolio and harp and so forth to play with the weather, mm-hmm. what I ended up doing at the end of 2004 was buying some webcams. I bought 4 cameras and I bought 2 computers and I bought some time-lapsing software.
Oh.
So I set these cameras up around the house and then started taking pictures every 4, 5, 6 seconds. And then at the end of the day, I'd get home from the late news, you know, download the pictures and assemble a time-lapse AVI.
Mm.
And what I wanted to do was see if there was something odd in the behavior of the clouds that I could use to make a better forecast so I wouldn't be pissing off my viewers when I got a forecast wrong.
Huh.
And so in the middle of April 2005, there was a series of aircraft flights that gave me my aha moment. And out looking out of one of my Southwest upstairs bedroom windows, in about 30 minutes' time, there were, I believe, 12 flights of trails. None of them persisted. But there was an undeniable pattern that there was something at that particular spot in the sky that these planes were interested in. And that a pattern of flights was never duplicated. I'd never seen it before, and I never saw it again.
Mm-hmm.
But what there was as one trail would be left behind, the trail segments of it would last or persist. And then another plane would come along from, more often than not, a 90-degree angle and precisely bisect that remaining chemtrail or trail.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, these planes are up there leaving markers in the sky.
Right.
And these markers are flowing with the wind. And other planes are coming along and marking off the end of those trails or bisecting those trails, or there are gaps in the trails and they'll fly a tangent or a diagonal flight through it. So those trails were up there depending on the chemistry or the chemical mixture of the trails will fluoresce under different atmospheric or meteorological conditions.
Uh-huh.
So let's take this another step, Lance.
Okay.
You've had a ridiculous amount of chemtrails out in California over the last 3-4 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I'll see them on the satellite imagery. Then I get my satellite imagery not from the National Weather Service, which as a rule sucks, but from WeatherTap.com. And WeatherTap.com will charge you $8 a month to access their database, but it's invaluable if you're doing this kind of research.
Uh-huh.
And so what they do is they leave metallic nanoparticles in the sky. And because they are metallic and because they are salt-based, what happens when you add, let's take this back to the home kitchen. What's the one thing you're told not to put in the microwave?
Metal.
Bingo.
Huh.
Bingo. So when the metal goes in the microwave, you spark, and it absorbs that energy much, much quicker than, say, bread or water.
Yeah, they explode.
So when we put these metal particles in the sky and apply electromagnetic energy into them, they're going to warm up.
Right.
And so what's been happening is they have been warming the atmosphere off of California this week. And when you warm the atmosphere, it expands.
Uh-huh.
And when the atmosphere expands, it becomes a bubble of high pressure.
Oh.
That bubble of high pressure is then capable of diverting storms around it.
Huh.
So that next inbound storm is going to be weaker, not because the particles necessarily in the sky, but because that area of high pressure has been accentuated artificially.
Oh.
And so then that inbound storm will likely not create rainfall in California, but will be, even in a weakened state, be shunted north to Oregon or Washington or British Columbia. Or the other option is, like putting a rock in a stream, it goes under that bubble of high pressure into the Baja region of California. And then once that energy is dropped that far south, then it shoots across Mexico and then can swing up in a nor'easter type of fashion along the East Coast.
Well,
so,
now, isn't there a danger of micro-engineering the weather? I mean, yeah, that seems like it would eventually lead to having to, I mean, nature used to handle this. If people are doing this, is it just in America? Is it all around the world? Then they're micro-engineering full-time at the cost of probably trillions of dollars of money underneath the radar, literally, the weather, which is then up to somebody who's sitting in a bank of, some kind of control room?
Right. You've got it exactly. That's exactly what they're doing. And what they do is they have to... How I like to explain it is the planet's weather has been digitized.
Uh-huh.
And that means, there's just literally tens of thousands of cells in the atmosphere that they independently heat and cool. And through resonance, large-scale wave resonance, then they can create a vibration conductive to, to rain or to snow or to high pressure.
What about tsunamis and earthquakes?
If they're capable of spinning up a hurricane, then an earthquake is not out of the realm of possibility, and in fact is probably far, far easier to do than the very delicate dance that they're required to do in the atmosphere.
Oh,
because in the atmosphere, they have to literally target, apply the electromagnetic solution, and go out and measure what they've just done. And that requires another round or another sortie of chemtrail flights.
Oh my God!
So it's like putting little electrical wires in the sky, in the sky that's fluid and moving. And so then you watch these little lines deform. If they're deforming, that data then as those lines deform, that they pull that data back into a supercomputer. The supercomputer computes the solution for a line of thunderstorms raging through the southeast. And if they're happy with that, then they'll let it be. If they want to adjust it a little farther north, then they apply another EM solution, boom, run another set of flight data to see if that did what they needed it to do.
Huh.
And also, how do you know what part of the sky and what layer of the sky you're shooting at if you don't put a target out there?
All right.
And that's something else that chemtrails are there for, is to provide a targeting mechanism.
Oh. Now, there's something really important that we need to clarify for everybody, because this is a question that keeps coming up, and it's a form of denial that many people have. What is the difference between contrails, which are a natural occurring part of a jet's flight, and chemtrails? Just so we know what's the difference.
Well, my opinion, and that's all it is, but it's the result of thousands of hours of observation and thousands of hours of high definition camera photography, is that there are very, very few natural contrails left. I mean, on the order of sub 5%. Less than 5% of all the trails you see are contrails. The other 19 in 20 are chemtrails. And that means the very, very short ones that last 2 or 3 seconds, those are still chemtrails. It's just a different mixture.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, how many, we've all watched the image ads of GE. You know, GE is trotting out this new turbofan engine for the commercial airliner, and it's so clean, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And it is. It is a clean engine. The problem is these airlines are carrying a payload that has to be dispersed from takeoff to landing.
Wow.
And because they engineer the weather, they know exactly, a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks ahead of time what payload they're going to need and when.
Wow.
So it's so easy to load up Southwest flight, and I tell you, Southwest, United, Delta, Northwest, UPS, FedEx, DHL, British Airways, Lufthansa, Singapore Airlines, Japan Airlines, all of these airlines participate in this program. All of them.
Wow.
All of them. You do not have license to fly.
Wow. They don't have to cover all that area.
Well, and whoever is operating this then paints their planes that don't have any passengers on them to look like Southwest, to look like Delta, to look like Northwest. Because it's the only way you could mix these warbirds in with the commercial planes is to disguise them.
Yeah.
And we all know how bright the people are.
Yeah.
Not very. They're not very bright right now. And their attention is absolutely not directed skyward.
No.
It's not there.
No, it isn't. What does the ordinary person that's hearing this show look for in the sky to see for themselves what we're talking about? Besides on your site.
No, the best thing is, and you know, honestly, Lance, I don't expect anybody to, you know, for me to convince anybody. The only way that happens is by your own observation. You have to go out and spend, you know, on a day where there's a lot of trails in the sky, you know, spend 30 minutes to an hour, pull out a chair, and just start watching.
Yeah.
And you'll see how these planes are very, very, very interested in the cirrus clouds. In the behavior of the trails that are already up in the sky. These planes love to clip the ends of old trails. They love to bisect gaps in these old trails. They love to reset zero lines, you know, essentially flying exactly along an old trail and resetting the line. Hmm. You know, they love to do this stuff. And because we're at ground level looking up, we really have what is a very flat or two-dimensional view of this. Yeah. It would be nice to be able to go up to 25,000 feet and see it dimensionally.
Oh, yeah.
That would really, really be cool.
Oh, it would be. So, now, these are all being monitored from satellites, I'm assuming, and that's how they do the, you know, that's how they're seen from a distance.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think satellites run like 98% of the kind of surveillance they do to see how the trails are behaving and how fast they're drifting and how quickly the powders are dispersing. Are those powders dispersing upward or downward, and so forth. But that means because they probably have, you know, 11, 12, 13, 1400 planes on this continent alone working on this program, then they can come along and after, you know, 10 minutes after one of those trails has been laid out that has the little puffs, the poof, you see those puff marks all the time.
I've seen those, yeah.
And you'll see how those powders will then turn into a helical spiral, or those powders will then be pulled upwards in an upward vertical motion, or they'll be puffed downward in downward vertical motion. Downward vertical motion is a stable atmosphere. It's subsidence. It creates heat. And in a drought heat wave situation, those powders will always go down. If they're in the process of creating thunderstorms and lift, then those powders go up. And they'll sometimes run another small business jet, a little Cessna or a little Learjet or an Embraer, or, you know, these little small jets. They'll come along and run the tops of these old chemtrails just to see how much they've dispersed in 10, 20 minutes. But it's what I don't have the greatest grasp on right now, Lance, is the ground operations.
Mm-hmm.
Where are all these planes run in and out of? I would love to stake out DIA or, you know, Denver International, or I'd like to stake out Albuquerque or you know, the airport at Victorville or LAX or, you know, Portland or Seattle. You know, there's all of these airports that they could easily intermix these planes into.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, roll them into a hangar, drop them down, reload them, roll them out. So many of them, all the chemtrail planes have little wingtips on them, the little winglets. That gives them extra lift, gives them another 3 to 4% endurance. And I bet most of them are serviced at night. They land at night, they take off at night.
Well, another thing that comes up in talking about this is if they're dumping all this stuff into the sky, into the atmosphere to heat it up or manipulate the weather. Number one, what's in them and how might it affect our health? If there's metals in there, what else is there in them? And why haven't we been consulted as to our ability to say, well, we don't want this?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of things we'd like to you know, bullhorn of the government that we want or don't want. And
yeah, well, that's
what they're doing. That ain't gonna happen, buddy.
But isn't there the danger of these things? These things all come. Whatever they're putting up there, what goes up, if it's heavier than air, it's going to fall down. And I've heard of people finding all kinds of sticky substances, and there are dark chemtrails, and people getting sick and having constant respiratory problems after spraying. And according to Clifford Parnicum's site, there's dried bacteria, dried blood, there's nanoparticles. Some people even link them to Morgellons disease.
Yep. You know, and none of that I could say isn't happening. You know, I can't say that isn't happening. You know, I wish I could. And that was the last part of me to let go into this, into the grand operation, was that there are biologicals. But we know that in this war for the human spirit, they don't want us in a state of health. They don't want us thinking clearly. Mm-hmm. They don't want us in a position to question their authority.
Right.
And so they will chip away at us in any way they can get away with. And you can go on to Clifford Carnicom's site at carnicom.com. And there's also been some, honestly, all you have to do is Google what's in a chemtrail or chemtrail air quality samples or something like that, and you'll find it. You really don't have to look that hard to get the hoedown on what's in them. There's a guy in Phoenix who set out a HEPA air filter at night, and he did it on consecutive days, you know, over a span of some months. And what he came up with was just absolutely astounding. You know, the gross pollution that we believe we created the FDA or the EPA in the 70s to protect us against. But when you query the FDA or the EPA on these issues, all they say is that we are not tasked with sampling for these metals, for these chemicals in the air. We're not supposed to look for them. That's their reply.
Wow.
So
and then what about the idea that there's a big brouhaha about global warming? Is it or isn't it? If these heat up the ionosphere, isn't that something that would be most likely to contribute to global warming?
And this has been where I've been wrestling with this issue for the last 3 years, is the climate change. How much climate change is natural and how much is man-made?
Yeah.
And it's my firm opinion that since the Russians began this in the 70s, in 1976 specifically, that we have lost our baseline to what's really happening with the climate, and that we don't know and can't know where our climate truly is because of this. Because one thing that has happened over the last 20 years is that the ratio of high clouds, cirrus clouds, to low clouds, stratus, or cumulus, has doubled. We have twice the amount of high cloud cover now that we did 20 years ago. And of all of the long-term climate models, there are, my understanding is that there are only two that include aircraft-generated contrails in the energy budget.
Wow.
And those that do contain aircraft-generated contrails in the Earth's energy budget, all of those say that is a positive feedback that accentuates the warming. Something else, science, that I don't know that you're going to want to hear, is that beginning in 1988, they began to automate the surface weather observing systems. Until then, they would send a human out every hour to observe the sky, take notes, and then code the report and send it. And then, like if it's San Francisco, it's SFO. And they would say, let's talk about describing the clouds. Broken clouds at 1,800 feet, broken clouds at 4,500 feet, and then thin overcast at 20,000 feet. And that could mean some cirrus clouds coming in. Now it's all automated. We don't even require that humans go out and look at the sky.
Oh.
A machine does.
Wow.
This machine only scans the sky to 12,000 feet. Huh. So it completely ignores all of the mid and high level clouds. That
wow.
data is lost forever. Oh. So it was another mechanism in this grand conspiracy to create global warming.
Oh.
And that was thought of and planned out in the 70s and 80s.
Jeez.
They knew they had to take the human element out of it and turn it over to computers because they could control the data coming out of the computers. So my conclusion is that they really wanted a global tax on carbon. They wanted us to pay this tax so we could feel good about doing something for the planet.
Oh, yeah.
And they hijacked the green movement to do that.
Yeah.
And I quit donating to Greenpeace. I quit donating to the Sierra Club. I quit donating to all of them because they're all corrupted from this group.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And the first one that will acknowledge chemtrails and that atmospheric pollution and how it impacts our climate, I'll start donating to again, and I'll do it aggressively.
Yeah, yeah, me
but that,
too.
I just don't see that happening for a while.
Me too. Now,
so,
here's another question. With HAARP and the scalar weaponry, I've heard, maybe I've even read about it on your own site, that one of the reasons the chemtrails are multitasking, one of the reasons why they have to spray in these patterns is to see if the scalar waves in the ionosphere are being affected by other countries. In other words, are we being attacked by scalar weaponry that can't be seen? It's invisible. The only way they can tell is if this kind of gray haze is in the skies, and the patterns that it makes when it disperses tell us whether there is a HAARP weaponry at play from somewhere else. Is that something that you've heard?
I think it's completely possible. Absolutely and completely possible.
Hmm.
Yeah, and there's another layer of platforms that are being used to deliver this energy into the atmosphere.
Hmm.
Off the top of your head, how high does a commercial airplane usually fly?
Gosh. I don't know. 2,000 feet,
let's
maybe?
Not much higher than the low 40,000 foot range.
Right.
So, that's 8 miles up. All right, what's the lowest the satellites can fly?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're at a minimum of about 120 to 150 miles. And at that point, you know, the atmosphere of the Earth is going to expand and contract and drag you back down, and you'll burn up on reentry.
Okay.
So we have this massive expanse in the atmosphere where we don't have a platform to get to, where we don't have the ability to, let's say, loiter, to go up there and orbit.
Uh-huh.
So, you've heard of these little orbs, right? These silver orbs?
Yeah.
They work that zone of the atmosphere. These silver orbs will go up there, and we've back-engineered them, and we own many of them. Plus, there's probably some of the other darker races that participate in the weather modification as well. You know, and I've heard from more than one source that all our military does with HAARP is protect it, and the Greys and those people are the ones actually running it.
Wow.
So I really don't know how much of our military infrastructure is actually run by our military.
Well, who's paying for all this?
Well, honestly,
dare I take a guess? am I sitting in the chair that's paying for all this stuff to kill us?
I doubt it.
Where do you think it comes from? Black operation money, like drug money stuff?
I think as long as these corporations will gladly take Federal Reserve digi dollars as payment, then why pay taxes if you can just print the money?
True.
And so they have two mechanisms. The only reason we pay taxes, it's an enslavement thing. The other aspect, you know, and all of these black ops have their own fundraising mechanism, and the money pours from the Fed and all of those banking families to operate their secret world.
Yeah.
You know, and it's known and understood, and we're the suckers on this side of it.
Oh, yeah.
So I really wouldn't worry about the money aspect of it. You know, and until the Fed is broke and bankrupt, it's going to happen. So that's the first thing that'll happen to stop this is we have to bankrupt this country, and then it'll stop.
Well,
and that's going to be an amazing day.
I hope I see it. It will be in my lifetime because it has to happen. Why do you think so many people are in major denial about this? I mean, you've probably had the experience where you've been talking to somebody and you just even mentioned the word chemtrail and they just roll their eyeballs and, oh, yeah, it's a bunch of bullshit. What is keeping people so wrapped up in denial and ignorance? Do you think it's just being dumbed down or being distracted by 10 jobs and 16 kids? And what is it?
They don't care. They don't care.
Maybe you're right.
They really just don't care. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll bring it up occasionally, but unless I'm outside, the last example, you know, we're just in the process of moving to Southern Colorado, and the gal was installing, you know, the DSL line to the new house, and it was a project because she had to run some line, and we're up at 8,000 feet, and you know, have a commanding view of the San Luis Valley, and it was an intense chemtrail day, and you know, I said, all right, Cheryl, come here, look at this. And I just gave her a quick blurb. She saw it and went, oh, my God, I've never really noticed this before.
Yeah.
And, what she was doing was a three-hour job. So there were a couple of opportunities. I think I took four of them to point out this, point out that, and look at those two planes there. They're flying in, you know, right at 90 degrees to that old trail. One came out one end, one came out the other end of that old segment of a chemtrail. And she's like, oh, my God, I would have never known to look for that. But that's the thing is, I really don't like to bring it up and talk about it with other people unless I can take them outside and show it to them.
Yeah.
And then it's in their face and then they have to deal with it. But the other aspect of this, Lance, is how do you process that?
Well,
that's
probably where most people shut down. It's like the same thing with 911 being somehow part of a, you know, inside job. The moment you bring up the 911 truth movement, people just go running, you know, screaming in the other direction. And this is one of those things where people's incredulity is stretched so far that they just can't even begin to fathom it. So the first thing to do is reject it or attack the person who's telling you.
Yep. Well, and I can't say that I wasn't there when it came to the chemtrail thing. You know, I was 5 years I knew that word, but I could not get behind it as a conspiracy, quote unquote, until I had a motive. I needed a motive, and then logically and reasoning wise, I could, like, okay, that's it, and then I could talk about it.
Well, you know, I first heard about him from somebody who was renting a small house from me in 1997, I think. And she took me outside and pointed up and said, you know, she was an old hippie. And she said, now look up, to the government or somebody is spraying these things in the air. And she called them chemtrails. And she pointed out the patterns and the X's and the Y's and the tic-tac-toes and all that, and I could see them. And I remember thinking, I was kind of like in the ozone. It was like, okay, well, sure, lady, that's good. And then I forgot all about it for about 6 or 7 years until I started seeing them myself. But,
I probably wouldn't be doing this if it hadn't been for other people who had written about him and become very vocal 10 years ago. And I'm appreciative for their work and their research and their attempts to bring the word, because it got me on board. And I'll tell you, every single newsroom in this country is aware of chemtrails. Every single weather department is aware of chemtrails. They're aware of what weather modification, and they know my name.
Wow. And now, they're told not to talk about it then by now.
No, they're just chicken shit.
Well, the media is controlled. We know that.
They control themselves. They really do control themselves.
You don't think there's anybody overseeing what gets
no.
what information?
At the network level, yes.
That's what I'm saying.
And the network owns, you know, NBC may own, I don't know what they're allowed to owe right now, own, but at least 12 stations. Yeah. And so there's just such a consolidation of power in the networks, and there are topics that are not allowed. And weather modification and chemtrails and getting the secret out is one of the things that I kind of hunger for the day to see, but I don't know what people are going to do when they realize the grand extent of the lie that's been perpetrated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what really is called for by all of us is a sense of detachment as we kind of come to terms with what's going on, because otherwise, you know, they own you. They own you through the fear that they've created. And Lance, we know that they've got a lot of cards, a lot of conspiracy cards they can play.
Yeah.
You know, they've got 9/11, they've got JFK, they've got Federal Reserve, they've got, you know, so many things that they can slowly roll out on a time schedule as they reveal who they really are.
Yeah.
And don't think that isn't a part of their agenda, is to tell the truth at some point. And then the conspiracy, then absolutely.
Huh.
Because they've got a timeline for disclosure. You know, then they've got to, you know, bring out, you know, the aliens, and, you know, all the conspiracy people will jump up and say, you know, told you so.
Yeah.
But then that's still, you know, 85 to 90% of the people are still going to be flushing their emotional bodies with fear. And that's exactly where they want them.
They want them
afraid.
That's a very good point. And that's why it's a good advice, it's sound advice when approaching any of these subjects, to go into it with an open mind and with the idea that it's not something that we need to be afraid of. It's already happened, so we don't need to be afraid of anything in the past. We're empowering ourselves by discovering the truth and sharing our observations with our loved ones, with people we care about.
And I think it's a little bit incumbent upon us to do that. But at the same time, we can inform, but we can't push it down their throats.
No.
And we can't make them believe it, because it, you know, that law of allowance is out there.
That's right.
And that is a law that is immutable, as is the law of attraction. So these people that have been perpetrating all of this, this energy is going to come back at them magnified.
One would hope so.
That's just how karma works.
Yeah.
And there is an energy, there is a Lord, there is somebody that is taking precise. I mean, this is a precision game.
Yeah.
This is a precision game. So, you just can't worry about it. You just can't.
Right. That's right. That's right. Well, it certainly stimulates a desire to be more closely connected to spirit, because we can see that the things of this world are very dangerous and most likely are going to kill us sooner or later. We're going to all go, but it does kind of raise your awareness when you start reading about genetically modified foods and how they damage the organs of animals and the seed bank that's being set up for some future date, lots of other things that we just don't want to face. But we put off facing them for so long that I'm afraid that it's going to seem like we're just getting slapped around left and right once this all starts to hit the fan.
I think it's really up to us to, how do we say it, you recognize the game for what it is.
Yeah.
You smile, you thank it, you bow, and you back out.
Right.
Really, because on the whole, it has served our development. It has served our unfoldment.
Yeah.
It has served us. You know, and that's really how, you know, we develop that detachment, is by thanking it for all that it has given us.
Mm.
And if if we didn't want this intense of the school, buddy, we wouldn't have signed up for it.
That's right.
We wouldn't have been here.
That's
so
right.
At some point, we recognized it for what it was going to be and how hard it was going to be and said, I can do this. I can do this.
Right. And we wouldn't be here if we hadn't already made that choice.
Exactly. And know at a soul level.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and know at that soul level that all of the support we're going to need is there for us.
That's
if
right.
If we can just open that connection.
Yeah.
And that's really what our practice needs to be, is in the meditation, the whatever it's going to take to open that practice. And that's where, as we started this, I have to shift, the conversation in my life, from, folks, the world's a little effed up, but, that's okay. That's okay. That's a part of this game.
Yeah.
So now it begins into moving us into the consciousness aspect of it.
Yeah. Now there's a deep spiritual side to you as well. You are involved with making the Ormus, I guess it's called monatomic gold, or it has lots of different philosopher stone, and you have quite a spiritual aspect to you as well, which I find very refreshing. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Well, absolutely. because that's who I am. That part of me is who I am. The weather, just paid the bills. It paid the bills, and I enjoyed that. But there was, I came across a book called The Celestine Prophecy in 97, and I was kicked out of the Mormon Church, when I was 19, early 1985. And, so I kind of wandered in the darkness, without a belief system. And I read The Celestine Prophecy, and honestly, Lance, it was like a dike broke, and I just, there was this fire in me that I hadn't realized was there. And so, from then to now, it's just a matter of searching for truth with the capital T. That I was really kind of blessed to come across a man last summer, and he introduced me to a different side of this, because before it's always inner work, what do you do? And you brought up something called Ormus, and Don, kind of introduced that to me, and in a way I'm kind of amazed that I hadn't come across the topic before. But Ormus is kind of a cool thing. Because if you go back to biblical times, how we actually make the Ormus came from a recipe from a man who was an Essene. And if you're familiar with things that were going on in Jewish life, around the time of Christ, there was the Pharisees, Sadducees, and then there were the Essenes. And Jesus was an Essene. And the Essenes were the cool dudes, because they were the ones fighting the machine. They were the ones fighting the status quo. And this man in Washington State had retrieved from his past life as an Essene the recipe and the method to make this Ormus. And this Ormus creates actually from salts. And in that particular place and time, there's either salt from the Mediterranean or salt from the Dead Sea. And the Dead Sea salt is kind of an incredible mixture because of its concentration. It's so salty. And within the geometry of the salt crystal and doing a pH swing, we're able to release these monatomic elements. And if you mix ocean water and Dead Sea water, then you get at least 11 elements in the monatomic or diatomic state. Gold, which is fantastic for connecting through your pineal gland or third eye to the spirit body. Platinum will connect at your throat chakra, and it is great for, that throat chakra, which is expression, it's the mental body. And then on downward through, silver and iridium and rhodium through the heart and solar plexus and all your chakras. And so the Ormus helps your physical body connect to your spirit body or your subtle body, through what are these monatomic elements. They're like little microtubules or little black holes. And that connection as your body begins to absorb and take in these monatomics, then goes out to your soul body, your spirit body, your energy body, and then as the souls reproduce, they reproduce accurately. They're not relying on their own copies. They're actually going out to spirit, getting a perfect copy of you in spirit, bringing it back and creating it in the physical. Cool.
Wow.
Very cool. So, what they've found is that one atom of iridium at the end of your DNA, as the iridium goes in and lines up, one atom in between your DNA strands, that instead of moving 10 electrons along, you have that electrical wire, which is your strand of DNA, you can move nearly a million.
Wow.
So then,
you know what?
So then,
we're going to have to do a whole other show on this because we're just about out of time. And we are out of time.
Hit up my site at Blue Water Alchemy. Hit my site at bluewateralchemy.com.
Okay, and then your other site is?
Weatherwars.info.
Good, and I encourage everyone to go to WeatherWarsInfo and do some, just have fun with it. Scott has done some incredible research. There's some great videos, and I believe there's a link to Blue Water Alchemy as well, so you can look into the Ormus as well.
Indeed.
Well, Steve, I thank you so much for being on. I just had a ball talking to you, and I wish you'd come back sometime and we can continue our conversation and find out more about the spiritual aspect and some more about the Ormus.
My pleasure. You've got my email, so you can hit me up any time, Lance.
Okay, terrific. And you have that radio show too every Saturday. In fact,
it's on now.
It's on now. All right.
I'm going to run downstairs and hit the studio.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it so much.
You bet.
And thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll call it a night. Happy spring equinox. Bye-bye.
Take care, Lance.